Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Let me just sum up a little bit from chapter 1 so that we will appreciate where we are in this chapter. The writer, of course, is Solomon. He speaks of himself, the words of the preacher, or the declarer. The son of David, he's king in Jerusalem, and he's the only one that fits that description, so we assume it's Solomon. And he begins immediately with the vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Well, that's a high note, is it not? Everything in life being vain, and it is, unless the Lord's in it. He'll conjecture that now and then. And he asks the question, what profit hath a man of his labor which he taketh under the sun? What good is it? And it's a good question, what good is life, and especially if it's lived without God? And the ultimate answer to it always is that it's vain and it's vanity. It's not worthwhile. And he talked about some things about vanity being illustrated, and he talked about generations passing and the sun just running its course, the wind persistently blowing one way and then back another. And he gives us just the repetitious nature of things and the vanity of it. And then he begins to talk about how he sought out wisdom and concerning all things under the heaven. And he said this was sore travail. We ended the chapter really with the thought that if you really know too much, it is much grief. In other words, sometimes people get too wise and it destroys them in that they amass knowledge. I don't know how wise they get really without the Lord. They're not wise. But they do amass knowledge sometimes, and it's very troublesome and wearisome unless a person knows the Lord. And so with that note, he then begins chapter 2, after he has said in verse 18 of chapter 1, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. He said, I said in mine heart, or since that's the case, that's the way we would look at it, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yea, acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me, and why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? as the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought out under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For that hath man of all his labor, and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun. For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief, yet his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail, to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now you'll notice in this chapter that he continues the theme of vanity that he had begun in chapter 1. In the first three verses of this second chapter, he will present to us the vanity of pleasure, or of mirth and laughter, as he points out. Since wisdom gives no pleasure, then he said, I'll just look at the lighter side of life. Hopefully with wisdom, there comes some seriousness and sobriety as far as our thinking is concerned. And he has come to the conclusion that that's nothing but grief and sorrow. And therefore, he will then turn to the lighter side of life. And let me say that there's not anything wrong with a good sense of humor. But that's not the whole aspect of life. And therefore, we will not find our satisfaction in that lighter side of life either. As he said, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. You actually look at it today, most of the, quote, comedians of our day are disturbed people. They're not people that really enjoy life. They're not people that really have a good grasp of life, nor a real good outlook on life. But by and large, most of them are emotionally disturbed and upset. And what they do is a charade or a cover-up for what is really inside them. He, in verse 2, said that laughter is mad, or it's just insanity. If that's all there is to life, then it's a very light life and a very shallow life and a very meaningless life. I enjoy laughter and I enjoy humor, but I do have a hope beyond the grave. If all I had was laughter, I wouldn't have much. For it's insane, he said. In other words, it just does not satisfy a man. It's not the lot of man or the fulfillment of man's desire. And he said of mirth, he then asked the question, what doeth it? What good is it? I mean, what does it accomplish? You know, we can sit and listen to a comedian go through his course, and when it's all said and done, what's it done? Well, here he said it's not really, hasn't accomplished anything. Now, there are certain things that we do in life that are not intended to accomplish a whole lot. Sometimes I go fishing and I don't intend to accomplish a whole lot. And most time I don't accomplish a whole lot. Once in a while I'll catch one. Somebody asked me one time if I was a fisherman. I said, no, I'm a man that goes fishing. There's a difference. Fisherman catches fish. Some of us just go fishing. But there's a lot of things in life that we do that really do not have any real results to them. They just are at the moment. And he said mirth was like that. What doeth it? I mean, what has it done for a person if they are in laughter, or if they're in grief, or in anger, except maybe you've kept somebody from hurting themselves or someone else, but as far as really accomplishing anything, mirth itself absolutely accomplished nothing. And then he said, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven of all the days of their life. And there's nothing there, he said. It's, again, it's vanity. And certainly this man now is pointing out, and let me mention it again. There are some key words in this book, and the vanity is one of them. There's some key thoughts, and one of those thoughts is under the heaven or under the sun. Now, this writer is not going into spiritual detail. He's not going into great depths of spiritual insight, but he's talking about life under the sun or here on earth. And it's a vain thing unless you know the Lord. Life becomes very meaningless. Not not uncommon for people to want to cut their life short. And sometimes they do, by either choice or by accident. So life is meaningless, really, without the Lord. And this is pleasure. God does not intend for us to not enjoy life. For the Bible said, if you'll enjoy life and see good days, he gives us then a formula. And I believe it's 2 Peter for the finding of good life. And we ought to follow it. Involved in that is giving ourselves to the Lord, to his word. And certainly looking into the right things, abstaining from some things, and involving our lives in some things to find a quality of life. But here he's strictly talking about a life under the sun, even without the Lord, or as some seem to think today, without a God to serve. And so this man said, I'll pleasure that it's a vain thing. And then he will give himself to great works, and he'll also find that that's vain. Notice in verse 4 and on through verse 17 that he talks about the things that he had accomplished. And Solomon, if you look back and study his life as you have it in the Bible and the record we have of him, he gave himself to various pursuits, and the Lord gave him wisdom. In other words, he was a very knowledgeable person. He studied the various animals, birds and animals. He studied various aspects of life in that sense, so he was a wise man. And he also gave himself to labor, and apparently he was a very capable architect. We notice that he said, I made me great works. I built me houses. I planted me vineyards. He amassed property, and he built his house, and he planted vineyards. He said, I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. And a number of things here, he was involved in it. You notice he was involved in the gardens. Now this likely would have been just decorative gardens, flower gardens. But it might have involved vegetable gardens as well. But he had it planted as orchards so that he'd have the fruits. You know, that experimented with it. He may have even gotten into the arena of grafting in these particular orchards and producing all kinds of fruits. And then he got in the lumber business as well. He said he made the pools of water to water the woods that bring forth trees or to produce lumber. This is always a crying need almost in every country that you're in, is to have lumber. And actually, our abundant country will someday know the sparsity of lumber if we persist in the building at the rate we're going now. I have noticed in the last few years a great last couple of years, a great jump in lumber prices. And it goes up constantly because there's beginning to be a scarcity of lumber, even though we do have an abundance. And honestly, if it were worked right and controlled, there would always be an abundance of lumber. But there's always seems to be the lack of desire on the part of man to plant back that which he cuts down. And now they've gotten fast-growing trees, and you can grow a crop of lumber in about 30 years. And so you could have a continual crop if you would do it. And Solomon tried that. He gave himself to the pursuits of having a constant supply of lumber. Apparently he got into the irrigation business. He designed canals and methods of irrigation. And then he also purchased him slaves and also cattle. He lumps these together in his day, as well as on up later in the history of man. Sometimes servants and maidens were looked upon just as cattle, and no better than cattle, but as valuable as cattle. And so he lumps them together. He said he got servants and maidens. In other words, he had people waiting on him hand and foot. And he had servants born in his house. Those, in other words, there was a longevity in this servitude, and he had servants born to him. And he had great possessions of great and small cattle. And that means that he had all kinds. There are certain animals in the cattle family. I don't know that he had Holsteins and Jerseys, but he did have all kinds of cattle. And so when he said great and small, that would include likely the sheep. You'd have the lesser cattle or the smaller cattle, which would have fallen into a particular category, at least as he would have categorized them. And he would have had various herds of cattle and flocks of sheep. And I think he called goats a herd, herds of goats. And so he amassed all of this. He's given himself now to great labor. And certainly this is always a danger of a man becoming a workaholic and consumed by his job. Now, I think that every one of us needs something that we can pursue in life that interests us, at least to make a living. We're not a very good producer if we don't at least like what we're doing. And God's always been good to me to give me, and he's been good to me in so many ways and allowed me to do things that I enjoy doing, and so I've got no complaints along that line. I like what I do is preaching, and I like what I do outside is I labor with my hands. I've got no complaints about life. God's been good to me. And this man gave himself to the pursuit of life and trying to find something that would satisfy him. And every one of us at least need that. But he gathered his herds and he had his servants. He amassed wealth. Now this is always a dangerous pursuit of gold and silver. Or silver and gold is in our text. And the peculiar treasure of kings. Now this man had at his disposal great resources, and therefore he could give himself to the buying of jewelry. There was a diamond, I think, that sold just recently for something in the millions, $3 to $5 million, something like that. It's amazing what some people will pay for a particular stone. And it's good for nothing except to wear, and who would want to wear it out in public? I was honestly don't even want to wear a good wristwatch. Somebody tried to take it off of you. You might have cut your hand off for it. I don't know. Been known to be folks down in Columbia that have been injured because they'd be wearing a watch that would be valuable and somebody just catch them with their arm available outside the car and they'd grab it. Of course, thievery's rampant in Columbia. And excellent pickpockets. There's a school there. If you ever want to get into that trade, just go down to Bogota and they'll train you. They have a school for it. There's plenty of them on the streets that'll give you experience in that field, too, unless you keep your hand on your wallet. I'll just give you this as an aside. If you ever go into Columbia, when you go out in public, you don't care a bit of holding your back pocket, you put it in your front pocket and keep a hand on it all the time. All the time. If you don't, it'll be gone. A woman carries a purse, she puts a strap over her shoulder, puts the purse under her arm, and grasps the purse like this and holds it. Else it'll be gone. That's just a way of life. Doesn't cost you anything. I'll just share that with you. But we're talking about pursuits of life, and here he talks about having at his disposal silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings. You have various things that become the treasure of kings. Art collections and things of that nature become the treasure of kings. And he brought all this around where he would have it available to himself. And he said, I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments. And he had him singers and orchestras and instruments to play. And that of all sorts, he said. He went into every country. I was just reading or watching the other day something on musical instruments, and it's amazing the folks that produce the musical instruments down in the Caribbean. They use oil drums, and they'll get a sound out of them. And various places you'll find different particular instruments to that country. And just to tell you where I grew up, it was a fiddle and a guitar. And that was about the extent of it. Maybe a banjo now and then. Now they've gotten classier than that. And amassed all kinds of instruments. But this man Solomon, he in his travels and as his ships would go out and come in, he would bring the instruments from afar and brought them together that he might find his delight in music and in singers. And God give us some good singers today. There's great need in our land for a return to music. I have always been amazed that some called noise music. I've never gathered the correlation there, how that you can call some of it music. But nonetheless, this man gave himself to music, and he brought the singers around. No doubt he'd have the opera singers, whatever. He put on his shows, and they were for his delight. Verse 9, he says, "So I was great." In other words, he lacked nothing, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Now you say, this man had the wherewithal to do that. He really had things going for him. A lot of us do the same thing if we had the resources. What limits us is funds sometimes. But this man had at his disposal his funds, and so he could do this. And he experimented with life. And then in verse 11, he said, "Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." In other words, these things that he had gotten, because he had great wealth and could do it, he said they're absolutely vain without the Lord. There's just no profit in them. You might sit in a concert every night and listen to great music, as it's called. And you might know all of the composers of all the ages. And you might have their music. And you might know what they intended to say, but it's all vain. It means nothing without the Lord. And so he took a look at it as just the benefit for man under the sun. And he said, "I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? Even that which he hath been already done. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness." Now he sees the difference, but he said it's still all vanity. And certainly it's true. Wisdom does excel folly. Certainly it's wise to protect ourselves, and yet we see the foolish people sometimes as they give themselves to a moment of danger. I recall just a few years ago, it got to be popular to jump off of cliffs with a parachute. Now, I'm not going to jump out of a plane with a parachute if that plane has any possibility of getting back to the ground safe. It'd take several large men to get me out of an airplane. And there'd be a bloody bunch when it did. But it became a sport to jump off of bridges and then off of buildings and off of cliffs with a parachute. The danger of jumping off a cliff is that there are side currents, updrafts, and things that are unpredictable. And I saw this couple as they were interviewed, and they talked about all the thrill of this, and they jumped off of the cliff, and they made it on that jump. But then as a caption and a footnote, it said this man was killed before this program could be aired as he jumped off another mountain somewhere. And so there's some things that are done foolishly in life. And there seems to accompany maybe youth, and with age you grow a little more cautious and wise. But to me it's very foolish to jump off of a tower or off of a bridge with a elastic strap that they call a bungee strap. Wisdom excels folly, is what I'm trying to point out. As Solomon said, there's a difference in the two. But even in light of the fact that wisdom excels folly, as far as light excels darkness, he said, "The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness." Now, in other words, a wise man will look around and see where he's going, but a fool doesn't. And he said, "I myself perceived also that the one offense happeneth to them all." Why did he say it's all vain? Because the wise man cannot escape death. It will come. just as surely as it does to the foolish man. It said, then I said in mine heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. In other words, it's a vain thing to be wise if you're both going to die and there is a great equalizer. That's the grave. It certainly, they all wind up about 6 feet down, not on a level, not much difference. It all comes the same, and he said, there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten, and how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Both die. The vital organs cease to function. It may be the heart, it may be the lungs, it might be some other vital organ. Maybe a stroke caused by a hemorrhage in the brain, something of that nature. But it takes our lives, and whether we're a wise man or a fool, he said, it's all the same. And no wonder, as he looked at this, he said in verse 18, yeah, I hated all my labor. Just hard labor is vain. In other words, just to labor for labor's sake is vain, unless there's an end and a purpose to it. Yeah, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? That's always a question. Now, the one that follows me and gets what I've got, he won't have much. Unless the Lord really blesses, and in the time I've got left, my kids won't have to have much to fight over. If you had to distribute it up, they can certainly carry it off in one hand, whatever I might leave for them. I'm not leaving any great wealth behind with Solomon, but leaving a great deal behind. And he said, I've labored. He said, I've built my zoos. I've studied animals. I've built my herds, my flocks. I've built my houses, and I've built my orchards. I have my timber. And he said, the thing is that when I go, there's somebody going to get it. He may be a fool. He appreciated it, and he was a wise man. But who knows the one that follows? There have been a lot of good businesses that have been built, and the one that followed destroyed them because they had no sense of responsibility. And this man said, it's vain, and it's disheartening, because I don't know who the man will be that followed me. This was the son of Solomon that followed, Rehoboam. This man was a fool. He would not listen to wise counsel. He would listen to bad counsel, and it cost him 10 tribes of the kingdom. And from the time of the death of Solomon and the beginning of the reign of Rehoboam, he had 2 tribes, Judah and Benjamin, that actually fell to him. And Jeroboam then took the northern 10 tribes and led Israel into a great display of decadency. So we find that this man is right. He said, I may leave it to a fool, and he did. He said, therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. It's been said of an inheritance that one man labors all of his lifetime to get it into operation. Another will take it and sustain it, and the third generation will throw it away. And that's pretty well the way it'll work. Because by the time you get to that third generation, they have no sense of the value of the business when it's inherited. You really know the worth of something because you labor for it. When you don't have to labor for it, you don't really appreciate it, and most times don't understand it. And so in this case, he talks about that. He said that he would leave his portion that he had labored for to somebody that hadn't even put a hand to it. Could not appreciate it, would not appreciate it. He said, this also is vanity and a great evil. Now, this is talking about life under the sun. For what hath man of all his labor, and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. In other words, he's worried about it in that sense. Now he draws a conclusion, and thank God for the conclusion. He said, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Labor under the sun takes perspective only in light of the fact of God's blessing upon us. And God active in our life, that who can eat or who else can hasten hereunto more than I. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight, wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail together and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity, vexation of spirit. Again, my premise is, and I trust you see that Solomon's is, to point out that life under the sun without God is a vain thing. And what he wants and intends is to drive folks to that place of repentance and faith in the Lord. And you say, do I quit laboring then? Well, certainly not. You find your place in life. You find God's direction for your life and you follow it. That's what he's saying. There's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink or have just his necessities, that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. That it was from the hand of God. He saw it was good because it was from the hand of God. And if God's given you your place in life and you find it, then you'll appreciate it and can certainly look at it with satisfaction. But if you don't find that place, you give yourself to the pursuits of these world's goods without God, you wind up likely very disappointed and sorrowful in life.